Tonight on the Goblin's Corner, we review
Deadlands.
That's how we roll.
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 That's how we
Welcome
roll.
To the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight, we're doing a 5-part series for Halloween. Why? Because Halloween is our most favorite holiday. And there are so many awesome horror-based games, guys. Matt, how many games are there horror-based?
Roughly 100,713.
I will totally believe that because your face says that. And we're only going to review 5 of them for this week. So we are leading up to Halloween, and tonight we're reviewing Deadlands.
Yes.
I have to say that, first off, every one of these games we're reviewing, you should go out and buy now. I love all of these games, but we'll give you a synopsis of the game. We'll tell you a little bit about the game mechanics, some storyline stuff, how to play the characters, and then some pros and cons, right?
Yeah, these are just quick rundowns. We are not going to do in-depth reviews of them. These are they are unpaid promos, if you will.
Yeah, if they want to pay us later, we'll totally do a more in-depth analysis. But I think leading up to Halloween, if you've got a game that you want to see, these are the ones that we've chosen, but write to us, info@goblinscorner.com.
100%.
All right, let's jump into the meat on this one. So, synopsis, Deadlands. How would you describe Deadlands, Matt?
Deadlands is what would have happened if the Great Ghost Dance and Shadowrun had worked properly the first time.
So, if the Awakening happened in the 1860s instead of the modern times or near future.
Correct. Now, there are storyline differentiations, but realistically, I feel like it's a pretty close approximation.
Yeah. Yeah, it has a lot of the same thematics because there's this sense of things coming through reality. There's, you know, talking to the great spirits. There's magic. And there's a little bit of mechanistics as well, guys, if you guys remember Wild Wild West.
Yeah. That's a great one.
So let's talk a little bit about it. So it's set in the Civil War. So 1876, 79, right around there, depending upon what edition you happen to be playing with. But I believe it starts at 1876.
Right.
And I think the history of it starts a little bit earlier, a couple years back. What is it? The 60s?
It's the day before the Battle of Gettysburg when everything kicks off.
Okay. So the day before the Battle of Gettysburg. So 1863 was, we had a Sioux shaman known as Raven performed a ritual to drive out the European settlers. And this ritual was created as a conduit to a spirit realm populated by these entities, malicious entities known as the Reckoners. And this was obviously called the Reckoning. And if you've played Shadowrun, as I mentioned, it's pretty much exactly what happened with the Awakening, right? They did this great spirit dance. These Reckoners came forth. And then shit got real. So cut to the next day, July 4th.
Then you've got the Battle of Gettysburg had just ended. And the dead came back to life and began indiscriminately attacking both sides.
Yeah, so the slain battlefield soldiers rise from the grave to start whacking the hell out of each other.
They hadn't even been buried yet, so they didn't have to dig their way out. They just stood up and started murdering.
Yeah, man. So that's how the game starts.
Right.
And then they talk a little bit about later on, you've got undead gunslingers roaming around. There's hostile Indian spirits. There's all kinds of deadly cults that are cropping up. And
strange creatures.
Yeah, there's all kinds of nightmare creatures start coming out of the woodwork and just start randomly killing people.
As a quick aside, I will say, some of the creatures that you will see in Deadlands, you do not see elsewhere. And I love games that have their own bestiaries.
Yes, there are some seriously crazy creatures.
Yep.
I love the monsters in this game. So let's talk a little bit about the Reckoners then.
Okay. Well, a lot of the reason these things are occurring is because the Reckoners feed on negative emotions, primarily fear.
Yeah, so the more fear that is produced by the populace, the more powerful the Reckoners grow, and the more in turn they can kind of change the environment in the surrounding landscape. Kind of like the Dreadlands in Ravenloft.
Yeah, very much.
Or the Zerg Hive in StarCraft.
Yeah.
Although not with fear. It's shit gross.
Right.
But now I don't remember if the Reckoners came about as a mistake.
I do not think it was Raven's actual intention to do precisely what he accomplished.
But be careful for what you wish for.
Yep, exactly. It's a monkey's paw, bad genie situation.
Oh, yeah. And again, we're only talking tip of the iceberg, guys. So what happens? So the Reckoner's goal is to turn Earth into this evil, haunted wasteland. Now, they can't just pop into reality. They've got to kind of get a critical mass. So until the overall fear level is sufficiently high, they're stuck behind the doorway in the shadow. And to this end, they use what power they have to create monsters, madmen, zombies, anything that basically will sow terror among a massive amount of people. Because remember, the more fear they get, the more powerful that area becomes for them, and the more likely they are to influence that area. So massive populations create more fear.
And the more fear, the thinner the veil gets for them, which means, once again, they get to act more, which means they can sow more fear, etc.
Now, one of the interesting things I find in the synopsis and the storyline of Deadlands is that because of this, they're actually responsible for the civil war in this game dragging on far longer than it does in real life.
Yes.
As well as, you know, other types of bad things. And people ask, well, how bad can it get in Deadlands? Well, for one, the state of California is underwater. Yeah. Most of it. Most of it's underwater.
There was a huge earthquake which basically turned California into Badlands, but as if the Badlands were in the ocean.
Yeah. I visually think of it in my head, and I think the way that it's been described is a series of islands as if the Grand Canyon was flooded.
Yeah.
So you've got these really tall outcroppings of islands and rock, and then everything else is water. And that's known as the Great Maze. Yep. And because of that, all kinds of weird, just weird stuff is on different islands. And there's lots of strange cults in California and all kinds of other stuff. There's stuff everywhere in the entire continental United States. But
the maze is awful.
The maze is awful.
It's not like the water's safe. You can't just jump in the water and be like, oh, I'm fine.
Sea serpents will come up and drag your ass
down.
Here there
be monsters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's giant octopus. There's a kraken swimming the Potomac River on the east side.
Sounds right.
That's not California, but yeah. So let's move on a little bit. All right. So what else is going on here? Well, magic is real for one, just like the Awakening, and because of that, it's not like I can just cast a fireball spell and be done with it. Oh no, you've got to basically wage war with your soul against these malevolent spirits in order to cast spells.
Sure. You're a gambler.
Yes. Which is where, and one of the characters they have is a huckster. But they have these malevolent spirits called, how do they pronounce it?
Manitous.
Manitous, yeah. And there's other kinds of horrors that also come about just from that. The dead can be possessed by manitous, and so they can walk around.
Yep. The Harrowed is an actual class in the game, which is a risen gunslinger usually.
You come back to life, and you're basically constantly at war with your dark self. We'll get to that in a second, too. Yep. We also have this thing called Ghost Rock. Now, Ghost Rock plays into one of the main classes, the Mad Scientist, which is one of my personal favorites. But it essentially works a lot like coal, except that it burns forever and it screams.
Yes.
It screams with the cries of the dead as you burn it, which I find awesome. And I really want to. I want some real Ghost Rock now. That's this thing. But it powers all these really crazy. And this is where I go to harken back to the movie Wild Wild West, because it's all these ridiculous steampunk gadgets.
Which can exist because there's a power source that can run them now.
Sure. There's alchemy and magic, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yep.
So players take on the role of, you know, your typical party of adventurers. Now, I think this is a Wild West theme because primarily the main book kind of doesn't deal with a lot of stuff on the East Coast, but more in the contested lands. So New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, the West. And so you can play.
It's Tombstone set in a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. In a fantasy horror movie.
Yes.
So you can play gunslingers. I think that's the base class. What else can you play? You can play lawmen. You could easily do, you know, good guys versus bad guys.
Yep. You can play shaman.
Yep. Which they are one type of what I would consider to be clerical, but they're really more of like the Shadowrun type of street shaman.
Yeah, they are more traditionally shamanistic than a lot of games provide for shamanism.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
There's blessed, which are those of the faith, so think the Catholic priest that's killing,
the exorcist.
Yeah, killing vampires and
right. However, blessed is not specific to Christocentric. They have sets of powers that are actually religion specific, which I think is great.
One of them that I remember is a Tibetan monk that is one of the blessed, and he just walks in and just basically starts messing people up, and it's really awesome. The whole, because yeah, they there's a lot of flavor in this game.
I considered playing a like Kung Fu the Legend continue or Kung Fu Legend
Kane from Kung Fu.
Kane,
yeah. Now, obviously, we said you have magic users, which are hucksters, and they play a little bit differently because you use cards to cast spells. So think of a gambling type guy with a six shooter, and he's casting spells. So you kind of get the drift. And then finally, mad scientists. And these guys actually use ghost rock, and they attempt to learn from the reckoning, and they're slowly driven insane over the course of character play. The more powerful they get, the crazier you get.
It's true. And the way you come up with schematics is through playing cards as well.
Yes. Yes. Everything's heavily playing card specific, which is a really interesting mechanic. So let's talk a little bit about the world, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts of the game system.
Sure. Well, we've already said it's set in the Civil War.
Yep.
In the Wild West primarily. Yep.
There's magic.
There's horrible monsters.
Horrible.
Nothing says fear like a 20-foot rattlesnake with tentacles.
Hell yeah. It's nasty fucking monsters. Every place in the U.S. is affected, by the way. And I believe in the expanded game setting, they have stuff for Canada and Mexico, too.
Right.
But predominantly, you play in the Weird West. The Wild Weird West. And then, of course, there's California, right? I only say this because I find that area fascinating because there's like rivers of blood. There's the Mexican Armada is roaming through there because it's contested land.
Yeah.
There's Los Angeles, which is under a curse. It's all kinds of cultists
everywhere.
It's fucking great.
More cultists than you can throw a rock at.
Now, thematically, this is very much, it is horror. But there's a lot of cheese to it as well. I would say comic horror in many ways. Or
it depends on it is flexible in that it very much depends on how you want to play it.
Yeah. You can theme it, you know, Army of Darkness over the top horror, you can do it World of Darkness, you know, horror, you can even do a survival style horror with this. And all of them equally work well in Deadlands.
Yep.
All right, so how does the game work? It's fairly easy. You've got a GM, what they call the marshal, yeah. And then you've got the players, obviously. They're the posse. So you got a marshal and a posse. What else do we got?
Well, the game is played with traditional RPG dice, the full range of them, which is D4 up to D20.
Sure. And these are referred to as bones.
Sure.
And they also have a set of red, white, and blue poker chips, which are known as fate chips. And they'll come into play later on.
Right. They can be used for several things.
So this is a success-based system, which if you've played any role-playing game that uses target numbers and successes and stuff like that, it's fairly similar. You roll however many dice that you have for successes, and then you hope at least one of those dice rolls the target number or higher.
Right.
And then, obviously, rolling the highest possible number is known as rolling an ace. So if you get all of them, if you just max it out, then you roll an ace. And then you can re-roll some of those dice. I think you can re-roll
your aces.
Yeah, you re-roll your aces. And then you can kind of add to the total. And this is similar to to lots of other game systems that do that. Where
refer to them as exploding dice in some game. It's basically if you're rolling a d4 and you roll a 4, you get to roll the d4 again, and you add that number to the previous number. If you roll a 4 again, then you get to keep rolling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, every 5 points over the target number is considered to have a raise, which makes you just more effective at doing something.
Right.
And so I'll give you an example. So when you attack someone, if you raise, then you give that attacker more control over, say, where the blows land if you're shooting somebody. Or maybe you do more damage or more precise shots.
Right.
Or if you want to do something, you know, badass in terms of thematics, then maybe you vault over your horse, do a backflip, and shoot the guy in the head.
Sure. You can also use it to what would normally be considered like a status effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
I hit this guy with the axe handle. I've decided to hit him in the back of the knee since I have a raise to knock him down.
Yeah.
I don't do any extra damage, but now he's prone.
And another thing you can also do is with when you get a raise, if you're reloading, then it lets you to kind of...
speed load.
Yeah, speed load. So you can fire more shots, which is very important. Okay, so we've got standard game stuff, successes, and then raises. We also have what?
Action decks.
Okay, so tell me about an action deck.
Instead of rolling for initiative, like most RPGs, players make a speed roll on the bones. Basically, the exact number and type being rolled is determined by your character stats, and then you draw a number of cards from a community deck based off of the results of the roll.
Okay.
The marshal then calls out the card values, starting from aces and going down to deuces. The card suits, which is reverse alphabetical order, and also in, wow, like it's like bridge. It's reverse alphabetical and the values of the cards.
Okay, and if that sounds complex, basically, whatever that stat happens to be for initiative, let's just say dexterity as an example, and you've got a 4 on there, so you roll 4 dice, and then the highest number you get to draw that many cards.
Right.
Whatever that number is. And then whoever gets the highest card gets to go first.
Right.
It seems like an overly complex way to do initiative.
It does, but I really feel like once you get used to it, it becomes very simple.
Thematically, it's awesome.
But also, the game is run in scenes, and so as long as the scene doesn't end, that is the initiative order.
Yes. Also, you have fate chips. Now, fate chips are pretty awesome.
And this is where we get into the poker chips.
Yeah, so there are 3 types, as we mentioned, and they're drawn from a hat, and then the player can blindly choose these at the beginning of the play. I believe they can be spent for bonuses. So depending upon the fate chip that you get, you can get a higher damage bonus or you can reroll dice. So you might get bonus dice to roll, for example. And then the marshal can also draw chips for enemies as well if he's feeling or she's feeling especially froggy.
Right. Now, one of the cool things about fate chips is you can burn them to prevent damage to your character.
Yeah, and the way that I remember playing it, there's a lot of the low-level chips, there's a couple of the high ones, and there's like one badass one, like one blue.
Unless you do something that affects those numbers.
There's also, and this is some, I don't know if this is alternate rules or just the way we played the last time we played, if you do something that is within your character arc, or you do something significant, like just something badass, then
you can draw.
Yeah, the marshal may give you a poker chip just because
they
want to see it happen, right? So I think that's pretty cool too. Okay, so we talked a lot about, you know, typical characters you could play. You play gunslingers, and they use actions and fate chips and so on and so forth. And combat is pretty standard to what you would normally expect. But we got to talk about the magic system for just a bit. So hucksters. God, I love hucksters.
I was going to say, this one's for you.
Man. Okay, so first off, they start off with a deck of playing cards, in addition to dice to cast their spells. And they call their spells hexes, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to make a skill check to draw 5 or more cards. So you basically deal a poker hand to cast the spell. Now, the strength of the hand determines not only whether you cast the spell, but also how strong the spell is. So it's a lot like wild magic in many ways. You draw a shitty hand, you may not have a powerful spell. You know, you draw full house.
Right.
Or a royal flush, you vaporize that guy.
I know the mathematic odds on that, and I don't care what it is.
Now, keep in mind, the way this works is that the huckster is gambling with the spirit in order to be able to get that spirit to do his or her bidding. So he is essentially playing poker against the spirit world.
Yes.
So if you get a better hand, you have a more powerful spell because you've won that hand. So a low-ranking poker hand means you don't cast a spell, but a decent poker hand means that you may get it to work, and an awesome poker hand means you just completely wipe it out. And all of the spell effects are then categorized according to what kind of
effect,
hand you get.
Right.
Yeah. So if in the spell list, you get if you get two of a kind, this happens. If you get higher than that, this happens. If you get a royal flush, this happens. Jokers are present, and jokers are wild. So they increase the chance of a good hand. But if you get the black joker, that means that spirit does something harmful to the huckster in addition to it working. So it worked, but it cost you something.
Just a quick point of order. If you're thinking about playing this game, make sure that your deck has one joker that is in color and one that is in black and white. If not, get a small one and a large one, whatever it takes. But your jokers have to be different from one another.
Make sure you have all of your cards, too.
Yes.
I think one time we played with some of the cards were missing, and that was just a pain. We ended up dying brutally. Okay, so that's how hucksters cast magic. Now, the Blessed do something a little bit differently. Go ahead and tell them about that.
All right, so you have a stat called Faith, and the Blessed roll their faith to invoke miracles. They pray or meditate, what have you, depending on the faith in question. Miracles are usually protective. They can be restorative as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can call down the fire, though.
Yeah. In fact, there's one, I think, where the storyline, the preacher prayed or something, and it holy fire just
blew up. Yes, literally a pillar of flame. Yeah.
Pillar of flame just blew the building up.
The difficulty of a given miracle is determined, by what you want,
mm-hmm.
but also how much of it you want.
And how much faith you have, too, if
right.
I recall. Yeah.
So it varies. If a priest wants to heal a gunshot, it would require more faith than if he was just trying to heal, say, a scratch, right? The difficulty there is significantly different.
And there's different miracles, which is what they call it in the original book. So you've got the Christian faith in the game, but you also have all kinds of other different faiths that were added in.
And in the splat books for the faith-based character, for the Blessed, they definitely branched out a bit more.
They go through all the religions.
Yeah.
Most of the major ones. And you see, you can really have some really interesting characters with that. Now we come to the shamans.
And they do their magic by making deals with spirits.
Now, what I find interesting about that, whereas the Blessed pray, and they get it, and the hucksters kind of swindle, the Native American tribes, they talk to them.
They barter, yeah.
They go, hey, look, this is what I'm going to give you, and you give me this. So it's an even exchange for the spirits and the shamans. So the shaman asks for a favor, or performs the ritual, whatever that mystical...
Which he has to succeed at doing.
Right, and so you have to roll to succeed that, so some kind of mystical mojo, and then you test that skill by the spirit. And if all three succeed, then you earn what is called an appeasement point. And the spirit is pleased. And if you earn enough to do the favor, whatever that bargain is, and it can be anything from calling lightning down to changing into a wolf and fleeing the scene.
Right.
So it's all over the place. Then you get it. If not, you don't get it, and the spirit's not pleased. And in some cases, I think they also
can botch it.
Yeah, and they take physical tolls on you sometimes, yeah. too. And that some of that is whatever that happens to be. That doesn't make any sense. So let's say you're trying to turn into something. It might be you might have to give hit points in exchange to shape change, for example. I'm not using a very specific example, but that's kind of, you guys kind of right. get the point, or hopefully you do. Okay. we're in the Weird West. We've got all kinds of crazy different magic. And we don't go into the mad scientists because their stuff is different.
Right. So basically, you attempt to make a schematic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are steps involved in making that schematic. You have to draw cards in a similar way to the huckster.
Right.
And the more successes or the higher your hand, the closer to the schematic you get.
And the quicker it takes to build it.
Right. But the thing is once you have a schematic, you always have a schematic.
And you can build it over and over and over.
If you want to build a miniature Gatling gun, once you've succeeded at being able to figure out how to make it, then you can build a dozen of them given time and resources.
Yep. Now, there is also a chance to go completely batshit crazy. And I believe that's when you fail hands and stuff like that. And also exposure to ghost rock can create some problems for characters later on. Okay, so we've kind of given you a brief overview of the magic system, about the world. Let's say you want to make a character. What do you do?
First thing you do is traits.
All right. So we have traits.
Which are attributes.
Yeah, standard, like how strong you are, how quick you are, and so forth. We've got skills, and these are just various skills that your character would know, just like any other skill point system. And the book has multiple different skills. We're not going to list them all out.
Right.
Then we have
hindrances, which are flaws.
Yep.
And then edges, which are basically feats if you're a 5e player, or basically the opposite side of hindrances.
Mm-hmm. Now, something of note in Deadlands, you will have edges and you will have hindrances.
Yes.
They're not optional.
Yeah, you will have them.
You will have both of them. And some of the hindrances, while inconvenient, can also be hilarious and amusing as well. And so it makes for a fun character to play.
Now, you can get more hindrances to get more edges.
Yes.
That part is optional. But
you're given
you
it.
Will
you're given
be
a
given
number.
Yes.
They don't have character points, and they don't roll dice to create abilities. They're determined by drawing cards from a poker deck.
Exactly.
I love this. So just mad chance is...
Yeah.
You could draw great, or you could draw some terrible attributes.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is great. So I just think that's amazing. And it goes all the way up. Jokers count as D12s.
Right.
But remember that.
But there's a special caveat to Jokers.
What's that?
If you draw a Joker for one of your stats, A, you must use it.
Okay.
Congratulations, you've got a great stat. But, .. you have a mysterious past.
Ooh. And a mysterious... That's right, I remember. And a mysterious past allows the GM to then... Or the Marshal to...
Could be good, could be bad, could be what have you.
It's going to be entertaining regardless.
But you've got it.
Yeah. And sometimes it's fun to have a mysterious past, guys.
And the number of D12s you get is determined by the next card you pull. So if it's a spade, you roll 4D12s. If it's, I've got to do backward alphabet. Spades are 4. Clubs, hearts, diamonds. Hearts are 3. Diamonds are 2. Clubs are 1.
So we've got traits, skills, hindrances, edges, and feats. You draw cards to get your attributes, and then you pick your archetype. Right off the bat, you got Gunslinger, Shaman, Blessed, Huckster, Mad Scientist, and then the last one, which we mentioned briefly, the Hollow.
Harrowed.
The Harrowed. Yeah. The Harrowed. I just came back to life, and I'm pissed. And there's this little part in my brain that might make me tear off somebody's head occasionally. And that's an archetype. I love that. I'm just this dead asshole that just came back.
I have unfinished business, and collateral damage could literally be anyone or anything.
And they get specific abilities, too, if I recall.
Very much so.
And it's all about bargaining with the evil in their that's living inside them.
Yes. But some of their abilities are super great.
Yeah. And I believe there's other archetypes that you can have as well, but those are the main ones that you should be concerned about, and they're all of them are lots of fun to play, and they all have different unique abilities. Even just playing a straight up gunslinger is fun,
and they all play very differently.
Yes, yeah. There's definitely a different system for each one, and a different style to to play.
You know, some games, there's a lot of bleed over between character types. Not so much in this game.
Yeah, you don't really see a lot of multiclassing, if any.
No, you can't.
You can do skills, and that's one way. And I think there's some powers that have a similar overlap, but there's, yeah, it's pretty...
Very, very little.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like, and I kind of... For people who, you know, want to do dips and all of that stuff, this may not be the system for you.
No.
But for someone who can enjoy playing an archetypal character, or even playing strongly against archetype for a character, to me, this game definitely does well for that.
Boy, you want to go into the dark and find yourself a guide to lead you through to find some vampires and an undead asshole that you want to shoot in the face? This is your game. Speaking of which, how do we play this thing? How do we level?
You don't actually level per se. You spend your unused fate chips, like experience points, and buy... You can increase your traits, you can increase mm-hmm. your aptitudes, which are skills, right?
Yep.
Or buy new aptitudes, if that's what you're aiming for. And you, so you can spend your unused ones that you've collected throughout the game, but also at the end of each section of the game, you get what's called the bounty.
Yeah, you get bounty points.
Right.
So you can blow your fate chips on bounty points, and then at the end of most sessions, which is usually the end of the game for that night, the marshal will give you some bounty points, and that acts like experience. So X amount of bounty points lets you level this up or that up, and then if you have any extra fate chips overall, you can add those to the pile and buy yourself some cool abilities and such. So it's like, I'll go back to Shadowrun, it's like using karma to
yes,
up your
very
skills.
Much.
You don't really level per se, you just increase your skills. Or World of Darkness is the same thing.
Yeah, it's a skill and stat-based game. There's no actual levels.
Correct. All right, it's a lot of fun to play. Let's talk a little bit about playing the game, some pros and cons. So first off, thematically, it is awesome.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun. If you guys like Wild West, it is awesome. If you like some historical stuff, it's not bad.
If you like steampunk.
It's great. If you like magic, dudes with guns and running around with a mad scientist, a flying contraption, throwing grenades while... This other guy turns into a werewolf and summons a great spirit. That's your game, man. This is a fun game to play. Just eldritch horror, lots of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
It's great. It tends to be high
lethal.
Lethal. Yeah. So don't get too married to your character.
This, if you are playing with a group of people or you're a kind of person who does not like the concept of lethality in your game, you probably ought not play this game as it's written at the very least. If you want to go Army of Darkness with it and camp it up, sure. You as your marshal determines the lethality of the game, obviously, at all points. But generally speaking,
it gets brutal.
As written, this is not a game you want to play if you don't like lethality.
Yeah. It's got some nice horror elements, which is why we recommend it for our Halloween set. And I think you should definitely play it for that. But I also believe it's got a lot of dark comedy.
Sure.
Just baked in.
And you can have a lot of the Blazing Saddles style comedy too. A bad roll of someone trying to use a horse is a Blazing Saddles moment right off rip.
Can choose your horror type too. And it does give a little bit of versatility for that. So you can go comic horror, historical horror, just plain, you know,
horror.
Yeah, murder horror.
Yeah.
The game mechanics are pretty neat. They are a little confusing in the beginning, so there might be some problems for people who have not played games for a while or just kind of get into the rhythm because you're using playing cards for a lot of different things when most people are used to rolling for dice.
Right. If you've never played any system that has a non-standard rule set, there's going to be a learning curve. I don't think it's awful. Primarily, you have to get out of the I roll a d20 for everything mindset.
Yep. So just be aware there is that. So that might be difficult for beginners to learn. There's a lot of thematics.
I will say this. For actual beginners, like if this is their first game,
mm-hmm.
it's a fine game because they're not comparing it to anything.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's great thematically.
It is.
I can't say anything but glowing reviews for that part. It's Perfect. There's lots of splat books as well.
Yeah, plenty of content.
So if you want to play in Gettysburg, cool. If you want to play in the, you know, near Washington.
Boston, I think.
Boston's got a great splat book. Washington's got a great splat book. You want to play in the Deep South, you can do that.
They've got class splat books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so they've got different books on just being a gunslinger, just being a Harrowed, all those sorts of things. I will say from, and this is a thematics thing, though, it is the Civil War. So there are a lot of touchy subjects that may be inappropriate.
Right.
Or may make people uncomfortable.
It was an awful time.
Yes. People were awful during that time. There's a lot of horrible stuff going on. It was our Civil War. So keep that in mind. I still think it's worth playing because if you don't want to play with those elements in mind,
just play in the Deep West.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just omit that part. Or you might have a group of players that wants to explore that dark side of humanity. And you go down that place.
Sure. I mean,
or you might kill some racists in the South.
Boom.
You can totally do that.
I was just about to say, you know, play the opposite of slave takers. Play Underground Railroad members. That would actually be a super dope campaign.
Sure. Again, it's versatile.
Can you imagine a huckster as a member of the Underground Railroad? You see nothing.
I could totally see that. That would be great. So overall, I would say it's definitely one of our first choices for Halloween to play.
Yeah.
Good Deadlands campaign. Get it. The books have been out for years.
In fact, the 20th anniversary edition came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so I'm sure they're pretty easy to find. You can go probably anywhere.
Drive-Thru has them.
Drive-Thru has them? Okay. So definitely
Drive-Thru RPG for the...
Yeah.
Just in case that didn't come through.
All right. We got a couple more reviews real quick, but we're going to take a short break after these messages. If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com. See you there. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so when last we left off, you were discussing an Underground Railroad for Deadlands.
I need that in my life.
We'll have to get that together. So we've got a couple other things as well for this week. I've got two more reviews. We have some monsters sent to us by our good friend Sean at Eldritch Dream Games.
Yes, indeed.
So let's talk about these. I've got the first one here. We got an Armapod Mimic, juvenile and adult.
Right.
These are monsters for Pathfinder, I believe. But you could easily adapt these to, honestly, any game. And an Armapod Mimic is essentially... Well, let me actually give the description of that, and then we can see what it looks like. These are insect pests of the worst kind, a bane to all that cross their path. They chew through walls, valuables, furniture, and everything else possible while hiding away in plain sight. Although not extremely intelligent, they are keen scavengers and know when to hide. These are basically insectoid mimics.
Yes.
And we chose these because, A, they're more dangerous than normal mimics. They... have an interesting intelligence. They have a bonus to their intelligence, at least in the Pathfinder system.
Right.
Imagine a cockroach that can turn into a table.
Yeah, basically.
It's spooky as fuck, man. Me and Mr. Roach don't get along. And if I sat down at a chair and it turned into a cockroach and tried to bite me, I would definitely not sleep well that night as an adventurer.
Or ever again.
Ever again. It was terrible.
I'd have to stab my bed every time I went to lay down just to be sure.
Sure. So they come in juvenile, adult, and queen, obviously.
Right.
And they do typical mimic stuff. They try to bite you. They have mimic poison. So they have poison damage as well.
Well, one of the things I actually think is interesting, because they're intelligent, they have their own language.
That's right.
Which means they can be spoken to and bargained with.
They also have their own lair.
Yes. Most specifically, where the queen resides.
Yes. There are also some breeds that consume different, like, specific types of energy. So you've got some that eat fire or cold or even force-based or anything like that. They all have this eat-anything ability, which allows them to consume all sorts of organic material. But some of the eat anything allows them to maybe digest your fireball.
Yeah, delicious.
these are definitely monsters that you would want to toss into a game. What would you use them for?
I love my players. I would do this for a newer group of players. My players will befriend them, and then I will have to deal with them for the rest of my campaign. But for new players, I think this would be a fun way to have them interact with a monster that is not just hack and slash. First off, they have to find it. Second off, they have to either fight it or realize that they can deal with it and try and cut a deal using tongues or whatever magic you have to be able to speak with things. And at that point, I love any type of monster, especially something that is visibly monstrous, right? Mm-hmm. That you can reason with. Because not everything has to be full murder hobo.
I would definitely make this thing murder hobo, though. I'll tell you two things I would do with it. A, some of them have discharge, so they can discharge their energy that they eat.
Right, the energy eaters.
Yeah,
right.
So they can make a burst. That'd be the first thing, is that you smack it and it just radiates whatever energy it consumes. The second thing is, I would totally make it turn into a door and bite off the first hand that tries to open the door.
I like that. That's super good.
There's one way to ruin a player's day right there, is to make a cockroach door.
Or a stool.
Or a stool. Ooh, a stool.
That's going to come back and bite him in the ass.
Oh, you went there. So definitely check that one out. What's up next?
The Curse Veil.
All right, hit me.
All right, the Curse Veil. First, we'll do the description real quick. Curse Veils haunt long-forgotten lands and deep forests, feeding on the memories of all creatures that cross their paths. Creepy.
Sure.
Creepy.
It's a spirit, for one.
Right.
It's an air spirit, if I recall, and it's incorporeal.
Yes.
And it makes fog.
But not just like, oh, here's a tiny fog bank.
Oh, I got this fog. Nah, man, this fog's going to mess you up.
It's a fog bank. It is a 1,000-foot radius. This thing is huge. And so it's not like, oh, I've got gust of wind, I can clear this spot out. Sure, once you find it in that giant fog bank, you can probably do that, but you've got to find it first. Meanwhile, it is eating the memories of everybody in this village.
So we've got a memory-stealing, air-based, incorporeal monster. Spirit,
yeah,
specifically. That produces a 1,000-foot fog. And it's basically a murder mystery waiting to happen in fog form.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is 100% a great Halloween-style monster.
One of the things I like about this monster and why we picked it for this is, A, it's really hard to find. It's incorporeal, for one. And it produces 1,000 feet of fog, so it could be anywhere. Anywhere in that 1,000 feet.
Right.
It's often populated, like its lair has all kinds of symbiotic creatures, so it might be the big bad at the end of everything, but because it produces this fog bank, other creatures that lurk within that kind of environment crop up and maybe follow it as well. So this can be an entire encounter based around one creature.
Oh, yeah. So the thing is this creature eats memories. It eats minds. It doesn't have any use for the bodies.
Right. They're not undead either.
Right.
That's another thing to consider. They are spirits.
However, it doesn't necessarily have to not deal with undead. Ghouls and ghasts would love this thing. They don't care about creatures' minds. They just want to eat their bodies.
Absolutely.
So why would you not have a bunch of ghouls and ghasts come in, paralyze the whole town? This thing eats their minds while the ghouls and ghasts are eating the bodies. Like, this is a tag team made in hell.
Now, obviously, this is made for Pathfinder, but I could also see this being thrown in for Ravenloft.
Yeah.
Easily. The fog banks in Ravenloft. I mean, imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the fog is closer today.
Yeah.
It could be a pack of these guys rolling through, because they're like, what, CR8s? I could see this thrown in for...
I would think they would be solitary, though. I mean, not necessarily as opposed to having other creatures with them. I just wouldn't imagine more than one of them in a place.
That's a good point, yeah.
Gotta share all that brain food, man.
That's a good point, yeah. You could do that. I could see this thrown in any other type of game. Any D20 system, it would work fine.
Yeah.
And you could adapt it to other games. I could even see this thrown into a Shadowrun. You imagine running through like the woods in Shadowrun and this giant fog bank rolls in? A couple, little bit of tinkering.
Oh, yeah. I also like the fact that it has some innate illusions that it can throw around, because nothing is worse than being able to add things creeping through the fog to mess with people.
Yep. Okay, so where can they find these two monsters?
Eldritch Dream Games has a Patreon.
Okay.
But also they can find Eldritch Dream on DriveThruRPG.
That's right. So they're located on DriveThruRPG. Go check them out. You can also check them out at eldritchdream.itch.io, or you can check their Patreon at patreon.com/eldritchdream.
There you go.
That's all the time we have for today. We're going to talk about another game tomorrow and some more reviews as well. I want to give it up to Eldritch Dream for submitting some stuff. Go check out Deadlands. Go check out some of their monsters. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a good one.
The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
Show song by the Mighty D20.
What a wonderful guy.
This is a Subterranean production.
The end.